Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Prisoner Release Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On March 23, 2011, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Brown v. Plata, formerly Schwarzenegger v. Plata. The question in this case was whether a court order requiring California to reduce its prison population in order to remedy unconstitutional conditions in its correctional facilities violated the Prison Litigation Reform Act. In an opinion delivered by Justice Kennedy and joined by Justices Ginsburg, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan, the court held by a vote of 5-4 that the lower court order requiring California to reduce its prison population was authorized by the Prison Litigation Reform Act and necessary to remedy the violation of prisoners' constitutional rights. Justice Scalia filed a dissenting opinion that was joined by Justice Thomas, and Justice Alito filed a dissenting opinion that was joined by Chief Justice Roberts. To discuss the case, we have Sarah Hart, who is a deputy district attorney in Philadelphia. Ms. Hart is on an amicus brief in support of the appellants. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Ms. Hart.
This is Sarah Hart. I am going to do a podcast about the recent Supreme Court decision in Brown versus Plata. I will begin my remarks by pointing out that I assisted in the drafting of a brief on behalf of the attorneys general who filed an amicus brief in the case, supporting the state of California's position. I currently work for the district attorney's office in Philadelphia. So what is this case? Brown v. Plata is one of the most significant prison cases to be decided by the Supreme Court in years. So why is it significant? In April of 1996, Congress passed two landmark laws that had significant impact on prisoner litigation: the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act, known as AEDPA, and the Prison Litigation Reform Act, known as the PLRA. Virtually every term, the Supreme Court addresses some aspect of AEDPA. Plata, however, is the most significant PLRA case to come before the court and has sweeping implications for California criminal justice. There's a little bit of background about the PLRA I'd like to provide. Congress passed the PLRA to address two specific issues. First, Congress sought to address the massive number of meritless prisoner lawsuits that had swamped the federal dockets. Most of the cases that the Supreme Court has taken over the years have addressed these series of requirements, such as partial filing fees, administrative grievance procedures, that were designed to stem this flood of meritless pro se prisoner litigation. A second major goal of the PLRA was to restrict unnecessary federal court orders, especially consent decrees that were micromanaging state and local corrections facilities. Congress provided that basic injunction limits now applied to consent decrees, established a mechanism for terminating old decrees that were no longer necessary to remedy constitutional violations, and also provided that any kind of injunctive relief or consent decrees would have to be necessary to correct a constitutional violation, would need to be narrowly drawn, and the least intrusive remedy. And in making that assessment, a federal court would now be required to give substantial weight to any adverse impact on public safety. In addition to these need, narrowness, least intrusive, and public safety requirements, Congress set up additional requirements for prisoner release orders. Under the PLRA, a prisoner release order is precluded unless, one, there's been a previous order for less intrusive relief and the defendant has had a reasonable amount of time to comply with that order; two, crowding is the primary cause of the constitutional violation; and three, no other relief will remedy the constitutional violation. There are also specific intervention provisions that allow prosecutors and legislators to intervene to challenge the entry of a prisoner release order. Most importantly, a prisoner release order may only be entered by a three-judge panel, and an appeal from the entry of a prisoner release order goes directly to the United States Supreme Court. The appeal before the United States Supreme Court in Plata involved a three-judge panel prisoner release order involving tens of thousands of California prisoners. This is the first case before the Supreme Court that directly addresses the substantive limits on prisoner release orders. This appeal actually involves two cases with a long and tortured procedural histories. The Plata case, which I'll call the medical case, is a class action filed in 2001. It alleged constitutional and ADA violations in the delivery of medical care to California state prisoners and resulted in a consent decree for injunctive relief. After finding that the state failed to comply with agreements and after expert reports noted serious deficiencies with the delivery of medical services, the federal court appointed a receiver in 2006. While the receiver made substantial changes to the medical system, the court found that crowding in the prisons was preventing the delivery of constitutional medical services for the plaintiff class. The second case, the Coleman case, which I will call the mental health case, is a class action filed in 1990 on behalf of prisoners with serious mental disorders. In 1994, following a trial, the federal court found Eighth Amendment violations because of delays in access to mental health services and required the state to develop remedial plans under the supervision of a special master. The court entered a series of remedial orders relating to treatment facilities, prisoner transfers, and staffing. In 2006, the special master issued monitoring reports finding that the state had made progress, but concluding that class members still were not receiving adequate mental health care. Plaintiffs in both the medical and mental health case filed motions with the courts claiming that the increase in the state prison population was interfering with the delivery of medical and mental health services and requested orders limiting the California prison population. On the same day, both courts issued opinions requesting the appointment of a three-judge court. In August of 2009, the three-judge panel consisting of Judges Henderson and Carlton, along with the third judge, Judge Reinhardt, issued a sweeping 187-page opinion directing the state to reduce the prison population to 137.5% of the design capacity of the California prison system. While there are disagreements about the exact impact of this order, it appears to require the release of between 35,000 and 45,000 prisoners within 2 years. In issuing this order, the three-judge panel relied on numerous corrections experts who testified about the effect of the prison population on overall prison resources and the ability to deliver medical and mental health services. In addition, the three-judge panel found that the early release of prisoners to achieve this population goal would not adversely impact public safety. On appeal, California raised a number of issues. While it raised jurisdictional issues relating to the convening of the three-judge panel, California's arguments essentially boiled down to a claim that the PLRA's strict prisoner release order requirements were not met. Notably, the case has a significant number of interveners, as the PLRA granted intervention rights in prisoner release order cases to prosecutors and legislators. The brief of the interveners, an amicus brief of 18 state attorney generals, really hit hard this theme, that before one orders a massive prisoner release with such dire public safety consequences, a court needs to show a current constitutional violation that can only be corrected by a prisoner release order. On appeal, the prisoner cited to the long history of these cases, the numerous past remedial orders, and the findings relating to current conditions. With these in hand, the prisoners took on each of the PLRA provisions, asserting, for example, that overcrowding was the primary cause of violations and that no other relief would remedy them. Their mantra was basically this: the state has admitted an overcrowding emergency. There is a long, tortured history of the state failing to meet remedial orders. And if not this case, there will never be a case that meets the PLRA requirements. So how did this case shake out? Although it appeared after oral argument that California might end up with a remand rather than the big win it hoped for, California did not even get that. In a 5-4 decision, with Justice Kennedy writing for the majority, the Supreme Court affirmed the three-judge panel decision. but it did so with language strongly suggesting that the lower court should be open to injunction modifications. Here's how the issues played out. Challenges to the three-judge panel. The majority rejected California's challenge to the convening of the three-judge panel. California claimed that the PLRA requires that the state have a reasonable time to comply with prior less intrusive orders, and that it should have had more time to address recently issued court orders. The Supreme Court rejected this, holding that this, quote, prior order, end quote, requirement applied to the original orders in the case rather than later orders. Because those original orders had been entered 12 years and 5 years before, the court held that this was sufficient time. The majority also pointed out that the state had never objected to the consolidation of the cases before the three-judge panel. The primary cause requirement. The PLRA restricts prisoner release orders to cases where crowding is the primary cause of the constitutional violation. The majority determined that this case met the primary cause requirement because it held that crowding does not have to be the only cause of the violation. It held that the PLRA requires that crowding be a foremost factor, a chief, or a principal cause. It also used a clear error standard for factual findings, and the majority concluded that this primary cause was satisfied because numerous experts testified that crowding was the primary cause of the medical and psychiatric treatment deficiencies. In essence, the majority deferred to the plaintiff's experts who testified as to cause. Current conditions. The state also complained that the three-judge panel had not permitted it to present evidence of the current prison conditions. In other words, the state sought to show that regardless of past violations, current conditions met the constitutional minimum. The Supreme Court held that it was proper to exclude this evidence because the issue before the three-judge court related solely to remedy and not current conditions. On this point, Justice Alito and Justice Roberts strongly disagreed, noting that the PLRA's use of the present tense meant that prisoner release orders cannot be entered unless a panel finds by clear and convincing evidence that crowding is the primary cause of a current constitutional violation. No other relief requirement. The PLRA specifically precludes the issuance of a prisoner release order unless the court finds by clear and convincing evidence that no other relief will remedy the violation. The state argued that a variety of different efforts, such as new construction, staff hiring, and prisoner transfers, could remedy the violation, and therefore a population cap was not necessary. The majority found that this was not likely to occur because of the state's fiscal crisis, and the majority deferred to the lower court's findings that unless the population is reduced, there will not be an effective way to address the mental health and medical issues. The needs, narrowness, and intrusiveness tests. The PLRA also provides that no injunction can be issued unless an order is narrowly drawn, extends no further than necessary to remedy a violation, and is the least intrusive means to correct the violation. California pointed to the sweeping nature of this injunction, 46,000 prisoners, and the fact that the relief was directed to non-members of the class. In other words, most of the prisoners to be released under this order would not be needing medical treatment or mental health care. They weren't members of the class. California also pointed to the panel's desire to create generally improved conditions in the prisons as being evidence of the overly broad sweep of this injunction. The majority dismissed this concern, however, stating that collateral positive effects of an injunction order do not necessarily mean that it is overly broad. In essence, the majority held that even the most narrowly drawn injunction can have positive side effects, and those collateral benefits are not enough to doom an otherwise narrowly drawn decree. Future modifications. Justice Kennedy pointedly remarked that the state retained great flexibility as to how to achieve this population limit. Even though he did not believe that the state had a viable alternative at this time, it was free to seek future modifications of the injunction. He later went on to discuss at length some of the potential modifications, such as extending the time for compliance. Public safety considerations. The PLRA also required the panel to give substantial weight to any adverse effect on public safety that would result from the release order. The panel found that the population reduction order would not significantly affect public safety and would, in fact, actually enhance public safety. Justice Kennedy, understandably, did not endorse this position, but essentially he treated it as a pure fact finding that was entitled to great deference. It was on this public safety issue where sharp dissents resulted. Justice Scalia, joined by Justice Thomas, attacked these types of structural injunctions where judges depart from traditional fact-finding roles. He described this as, quote, fact-finding as policy-making, end quote. And he also saw these types of public safety predictions to be extremely controversial. It's no wonder that he took this view, given the nature of the findings by the three-judge panel. For example, the panel found it to be clear that overcrowding would perpetuate a criminogenic prison system. It also found that California's sentencing policies were antiquated. The panel rejected testimony that inmates released would commit new crimes. And the panel also found that shorter sentences would reduce recidivism. Because these predictions were made by expert witnesses, Justice Scalia found that they were not entitled to deference. The majority, however, cast these as factual findings and deferred to them. Justice Alito, joined by the Chief Justice, dissented strongly on the public safety issue. He agreed that these types of policy predictions should not be granted deference. He also cited to past experiences with prisoner releases and Congress's view that any prisoner release orders inherently posed public safety risks. He believed that the majority's deference to the panel decisions and fact-finding trivialized the PLRA's public safety provisions. So what happens next? This is certainly not to be the final word on whether California is required to implement massive prisoner releases. California certainly can move to modify the decree in some of the ways suggested by Justice Kennedy. California is also free to use the independent PLRA termination provisions if it wants to limit this order. The strategy is complicated somewhat by the Ninth Circuit's view, which has been rejected by other circuits, that the government must prove the absence of current constitutional violations to limit or terminate a decree. Other circuits have held that PLRA burden is placed on the prisoners to prove a current and ongoing violation if they want to retain an injunction following a termination motion. Although California also seeks to achieve population reductions by moving prisoners to the county systems, that move will also have public safety consequences. Local county jails lack the money or space to accommodate a large influx of prisoners. Inevitably, such transfers will lead to releases of either pretrial detainees or sentenced prisoners at the county level. And so what is the impact of this decision on other jurisdictions? While the interpretations of the PLRA provisions are not as favorable as other jurisdictions may have hoped, the California case is very unique. Most jurisdictions have terminated these longstanding decrees using the PLRA termination provisions. Other jurisdictions are not facing the same sort of prisoner population orders. So in the end, what do I make of this decision? On the most basic level, I wonder how on earth one can justify a massive release of prisoners like this without even considering whether the current conditions are unconstitutional. To me, that is one of the most basic provisions of the PLRA. It also is very odd to see such a sweeping order dealing with general prison overcrowding cases arise in the context of a medical and mental health case. However, given the positive results that the prisoners had seen in those two specific cases, it's not surprising that they tried to bring the general overcrowding claims into those cases because, in essence, they assured a more favorable three-judge panel. The bottom line on this is that I don't think this is the final word by any stretch of the imagination. This case is a long and tortured history, and I think it will continue to do that. I also don't think that this is the last time that the case will appear before the Supreme Court. Inevitably, California at some point has to start challenging the prisoner release orders in relation to the current conditions, whether that be by termination or modification provisions.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.